Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Choir Fam Podcast.
I'm Dean Leafy, the Director of Choral Activities at Washington State University.
And I'm Matthew Myers, the Coordinator of Choral Music Education at Washington State University.
In our discussions about the current state of choral music and what it will look like in the future, we agreed that more conversations need to happen to bring the choral community together.
And that's why we're here. We bring guests from the worldwide choir fam onto the show to share their wisdom and help make our choral world a little bit closer.
By speaking with our guests, we hope to provide interesting tidbits of knowledge you could use in your day-to-day rehearsals and give you a sense for how issues that matter to all of us are being observed and addressed.
We hope you'll enjoy these conversations as we work to strengthen our choral community. Welcome to the Choir Fam. Alrighty, Dean. It's episode one of our podcast.
Episode one!
Can you believe it? We've been talking about this for a few months, and now it's finally happening.
And here it is. Today's the day. That's right.
Yeah. So how have things been going for you, Dean?
Not bad. It's fall here in the Palouse in Pullman, Washington. It's gorgeous. And we're in, let's see, week 11. And our students are they're feeling the burn, the last push until holiday breaks and such.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I certainly would advocate for them getting a fall break, but they are pushing through quite well. Just a couple weeks and then it's Thanksgiving.
That's right.
There'll be a big sigh of relief, I think.
Absolutely.
But it's really looking like Thanksgiving weather out there, you know, leaves on the grass. And I don't know, it looks a lot more like fall than my last few years in the South.
Yeah, that's right. Alabama, any changing colors at all?
There were some changing colors in Alabama, Louisiana, much less so. I mean, there were a few trees here or there, but most of them never lost their leaves. So,
yeah. And here in the Palouse, you know, in the town proper, we have a fair number of trees. And then you go outside of the town, bam, wheat fields. So it's nice to see all the fall colors in town. And yeah, it's enjoyable.
Yeah. So happy fall, everybody. By the time you hear this, it probably will not be fall. But you can imagine some slightly warmer temps when you give a listen to this episode.
For our first couple episodes, we're going to interview each other.
We're hoping that this provides our listeners with an in-depth look at our backgrounds, where we've been, and how we fell in love with teaching choral music.
So Matt, today we're interviewing you.
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
Hi, Matt. I'm glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, it's good to be here. I hope to be on future episodes as well.
Yes, I hope so too. Yeah. So first question that we ask our guests, and we'll ask that of you as well, is tell us how you came to love choir.
Yeah, for me, it was just kind of an instant thing. So when I was in third grade, we had a new music teacher, and her name was Melanie Brink. And she was just fresh out of student teaching. So we were her first class, and she started a choral program at our elementary school. So before they had general music, but they had not had a choir before. So pretty much everybody did it. And certainly I had taken a couple years of piano lessons, and you know, I definitely had an appreciation for music before that. But yeah, there was really no question, you know, new teacher is starting this new thing. Everybody joins up, and I have loved choir ever since. So I've really never had a moment that choir hasn't been in my life since the third grade.
So, you know, we have these experiences that sort of immerse us in this, and sometimes we're just drawn to it or whatnot. But something also, you know, at times could sort of push us there. So were either of your parents, brothers, sisters, anybody in your family musically inclined?
Yeah, so my parents were both in choir in high school. My dad sang in all-state chorus his senior year, and neither of them sang formally after that. But you know, at church they would always sing, and it's not as though our family did a whole lot of singing. But I think we might have had a Christmas carol or two here or there. And then I have three older sisters. My eldest sister was in choir throughout high school and actually majored in music for the very beginning of college before switching to psychology. And so she was in like the select madrigal group that that came and toured the elementary schools. So when she was in 12th grade, I would have been in first grade. So I definitely like knew what choir was before I had the chance to be in one. You know, I was definitely interested in it before then. My other two sisters were less into choir, but Annie did sing in her senior year of high school and then a little bit in college as well. So yeah, my family has been involved in music, but you know, we didn't have any close relatives that, you know, majored in it or did it as a career or anything.
Yeah. Well, and that goes to show that if you can get a brother or sister, an elder one, that maybe the siblings behind them may be coming into your program as well. That's a hope we can have.
That was definitely the case when I was teaching high school. Pretty much most of the time, all of the younger siblings just knew that choir was a safe place for them. So yeah, definitely I can attribute, you know, Amy being involved in choir as part of my interest. But I do think that I was extremely lucky. That teacher that I had in third grade, she followed my class around, like Mr. Feeney on Boy Meets World. For those of you who don't know this show, they start off in middle school, and then their middle school history teacher becomes the high school principal. So after the first couple seasons, he's still there. And then he's the dean when they go to the university.
Wow, that's a progression.
Yeah. So Mrs. Brink was our elementary teacher. That was her first 4 years of teaching. And then she went with us to the junior high. And then she went with us to the high school. So I had her from third through ninth grade. And so, you know, music and choir were just a constant, and I was in band as well, but the end of eighth grade, I kind of had to choose. It would have been possible for me to do both in high school, but, you know, I was trying to take all of the advanced classes I could and all of that. So, ultimately choir was always the class that actually challenged me. In other classes, it was really easy to just like do a small amount of studying and get 100%, or you just pay attention, you take notes. And in band, I felt that way as well, because I could read music after my years of piano. And often the saxophone parts were really straightforward. We had the melody a lot. And in choir, I never had the melody. My voice had just changed. I was very bad. I mean, I could still read music and I could tell if I was in tune or not, but things did not always go as I was hoping as they would go in middle school choir.
As happens.
So choir in that way was probably my most challenging class. Not that I didn't love going to it, but challenging in that there was always something new to learn and always some way to push myself further. So it was really a no-brainer. There was no question that I was going to continue into high school. But I never thought about being a musician or as a music teacher at that point. There was part of me in middle school that, you know, wanted to be on Broadway and act and perform and all of that. But I never really thought about being a teacher until Mrs. Brink left. So after my ninth grade year, she went to teach in an international school in Muscat, Oman. And she's been there ever since. So almost 20 years now, she's been teaching at the same school. And you know, this was 2002, when she initially told us that she was moving to the Middle East, like we actually thought she was joking, like things were really tenuous at that point. But found out later that Oman is like one of the safest, most peaceful countries in the world. And haven't been involved in a conflict with another country for decades. And so she went off to this new position and we got a new choir teacher at the high school. And this teacher had been at our rival school across the town. She had been there, I think, 11 or 12 years, and then had taught elementary music for 1 year, just kind of needed a change. And then the position was open. So we got a new teacher. And the transition was a little difficult for those of us who had the same teacher since third grade, but not difficult in a bad way. Like we had another excellent, wonderful choir teacher. She was actually recently acknowledged by NAFME as like, choral educator of the year for the entire United States. You know, so I really lucked out with my first two choir teachers. So this new one, sophomore year, was Kathy Britton. And I realized there was more than one choir teacher in the world. You know? It was not just Mrs. Brink, but also Mrs. Britton was great. And that kind of helped me realize this was something that I could do and had interest in. So I knew probably mid-year, sophomore year, that I would like to teach choir. So that's kind of how I got my start. Two really excellent teachers. And what's really kind of cool, Mrs. Brink student taught under Mrs. Britton.
So, wow.
Like, they had certain things in common because of that kind of shared experience, but, you know, both so uniquely strong. Another fun thing, Mrs. Brink's elementary student teaching placement, I student taught with that same teacher. So kind of this small world of experiences and building up these skills. So
yeah. So listeners, for these first couple episodes, to keep ourselves from babbling about choral music, which we could do for a very long time, but maybe it wouldn't make for an interesting podcast, we've decided to focus on one takeaway from each place we've worked or studied. So let's go through your timeline, Matt. Next up is undergrad, yes?
Yes. So I went off to Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, and I studied choral music education there. At Luther, no one can be a music education major. Everyone's a music performance major. We have a BA in performance, and then your second concentration area is music ed. So I was able to basically do both degrees, vocal performance and music ed at Luther. I think that the biggest takeaway I had there was that competition does not need to be cutthroat. So we had about 500 people singing in the choral program. So six full ensembles. You know, my sophomore year, I was in a choir of 100 people. And I came in, you know, having grown up in South Dakota, you know, a less populated state. I knew that I had some skills and came in kind of thinking that I might be more successful than I was initially. So that first year, you know, I auditioned for Nordic Choir from my sophomore year. And I didn't get the first round callback, and there were four rounds of callbacks. So I didn't even get to sightsee, which is about all I'm good for. So, you know, that was my big thing that has gotten me far, you know, with sightseeing. And I didn't make it to the next round past singing my vocal solo. And I think that was really good for me to know that there was always another step I could move forward and keep improving. But also that while it was very competitive, it was also super homey, that definitely a sense of community throughout the school, and, you know, all of the different choirs supported one another, and we'd all come together and sing at Christmas at Luther. And, there'd be one rehearsal where we'd all wear our sweatshirts. And so every choir had a different color, and, you know, it was not a sense that we were disconnected in any way, that everyone supported everybody else. And it was just a really, really great place to study.
That sounds awesome. So I kept hearing about, you know, Christmas at Olaf, Christmas at Luther. And I got to say, Matt, I'm jealous.
Yeah.
I think that that would have been, seems like it would have been an amazing experience.
Yeah. And what's kind of cool is my class, our first year, we were nationally broadcast on TV. And so I would show that the next couple of years. So we got broadcast again our senior year. So only one in four classes will get recorded twice like that. So we kind of lucked out. So you'd get to watch us on PBS and see us all blow out our candles at once and all that kind of stuff. So I've got to say, that must have been some really special maneuvering with the fire department, that we could have 500 real candles and we were all wearing our velvet robes and there were trees everywhere. So we must have gotten some very special permission. It was a really special event, and we would usually have, we had five performances all sold out. I think we could seat about 1300 in there. So it was a big commitment, but also choir kind of ran our school. So we never had like huge assignments due that week. So it always worked out.
So you graduated vocal performance, music ed, and then you went to teach overseas after that.
Yes. So that same teacher I had from third through ninth grade, she was going on a maternity leave. So I student taught in the fall, and then in the spring I was doing some day-to-day subbing, I was working at a bank part-time, and she needed someone to come in and be about 3 months to lead her middle school and high school choirs. So I ended up applying for, and that was the first job that I took. So my first interview was on Skype, which feels very 2021. Does not feel like that time. So yeah, so I went overseas, to the chagrin of my parents. They were very concerned about me being so far away, but it was a really great experience. So I had grade level choirs, sixth grade, and then there were 2 7th grade and 2 8th grade choirs. They were split up by those who were in band and those who weren't in band, so smaller groups. And then the high school choir, we had one group of about 40 in the concert choir, and then a small kind of a cappella vocal jazz show choir, kind of all types of other kinds of music, a small group of about 12 to 16. So yeah, that was my my experience over in Muscat, Oman. I had students of 56 different nationalities, and many of my students were fluent in 3, 4, 5 or more languages. So,
oh my gosh, that had to have been such a rich experience.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. And these students, many of them would move from one country to the next every couple of years. So there was this sense that, the stability of having people stay in the same place was not necessarily something that everybody desired. There was this sense of adventure, and sometimes the teachers would stay for 2 years at a school and then sign another contract in Thailand or in China, or, the people that I worked with were really welcoming and very adventurous. It was a really cool place to teach.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So, you started teaching overseas, you got some experience there, and then off to high school. You taught some high school after that?
Yeah. So I was in Oman for just that spring trimester and really kind of learned to value this diversity of this school. And then I moved to Illinois and taught a high school program for 5 years. And they had a pretty strong choral program in the past. And they were definitely like hungry to keep building. So when I got there, it was the students that I had all were the type of people that would have been in choir no matter what, and pretty quickly we were able to start growing up the program and building things quite a bit. It was a private Catholic high school. So very academically focused. And with that in mind, I had to grade the students, like 75 to 80% of what I graded for them had to be on paper. So performance assessments, wow. I could do a little bit, could grade slightly on attendance for like big concerts and so forth, but had to be creative to find ways to give this like rigorous college prep curriculum with a lot of writing. So that's where I kind of fell in love with the national standards of arts education.
I tell you what, let's hold on to that quote and let's see if our other listeners have the same thing, where they fall in love with the national standards. We'll see.
Yeah, I always felt like it was pretty easy to do standard one, which was singing alone and with others, a varied repertoire.
That's right. Yeah.
These standards have changed in 2014. So to the younger teachers, just know that they're very similar. They're just not written in exactly the same language. It was really important to me that students were not only literate musicians, but also great consumers of music. And anytime that we could tie the music to some other subject areas, that could create some interesting assessments. you know, because I could have them write about their feelings quite a bit, you know, why they liked certain pieces and why those were important to them and so forth. But if that's all you're doing for, you know, like 1,000 points worth per semester, that can get pretty old pretty fast. So my students did, you know, they learned all of their musical terms and symbols. They learned their key signatures. We would do a little bit of dictation, lots of sight singing, all of these things. I grew more and more passionate about, and people would ask, you know, how do you have time to do that? Don't you need to learn the music for your concert? And I was like, they learn it faster now. they know what they're singing about. And so definitely felt that they were able to build upon on their own skills. And, you know, by the time they were juniors and seniors, when we would break off into sectionals, I knew stuff was getting done. Like they were very competent to learn music without me there. So I was very happy ultimately about this assessment system. Although I will say, when I started there, semester exams were worth 33% of their grade. I've never had a test worth that much.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So we were able to fight and get that down to 20%. I was pushing for 10, but, you know.
Hey, you win the battles that can be, or you fight the battles that can be won, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, we got it down closer to 10 than to 33. So that's good. So yeah, I'd say my biggest takeaway from teaching in Oman was the value of diversity and, you know, the different life experiences that everyone has to offer, not only where they're from, but also how long they've lived certain places and the different kind of things that they can experience. So from teaching in Boylan, my biggest takeaway was that there truly are so many different ways to learn. There's no right or wrong way. So trying to have as much variety in assessing so that everyone had a way to shine.
That's great. So you were teaching high school, and at one point then you said, maybe I want to make a change. Now, we can talk about, you know, sort of where you auditioned and ultimately where you went after that, and we will. But suddenly there's a change. Why is there a change? Why did you want to go on to grad school?
Yeah, so I always knew it was going to happen. You know, my undergraduate director of choral activities, Craig Arnold, you know, he talked to me, definitely said, you know, you should consider going on and getting a master's degree, maybe a doctorate sometime. You should consider teaching college, but definitely teach middle school or high school first. And he even went so far as to tell our choral methods class, like, I will gladly write you recommendations for jobs. I will not write you recommendations for choral conducting programs yet. First, you have to go and conduct choirs, and then we can do that. So I always had in my mind that I would like to stay at least 4 years. I wanted to see my first year students become seniors and just kind of see how far we could come in that length of time.
When you decided to go, is there anything in particular that you were looking for? Like, for example, some people say, oh, I want to study with this person, or I want this part of my studies. I really want to, oh, I love the choir, so I want to be in that choir. This college choir is great. I want to be a part of that. So how did you make your decision to, well, where you were going to audition and ultimately where you wanted to go?
Yeah. I was kind of an island in the community where I was teaching. So a lot of the other schools in town didn't have choirs. There was an arts magnet high school. So if you enjoyed singing, you went there. And the other schools didn't have choir. And it was just kind of an isolated area. So, you know, students were very successful. We actually won the state contest a couple of times. And I felt that I was not necessarily growing or improving. And I could have stayed at that job for 30 years, you know, and done the same thing. But I knew that it was time for me to learn and grow again. You know, I had kind of mastered to some level what teaching high school was like. And now I knew that I was ready to learn more things. But I didn't really have a great concept of what I still needed to know. You know, and I remember one time going to the state large group contest, and on the adjudication sheet, one of the judges just gave us all fives and wrote good. Like, we go to those things for feedback. I don't need you to tell me I'm good. Yeah. The choir is good. I need you to tell us what specifically was good and, you know, what we needed to work on. So I was looking for a place that I could get a lot of feedback. And I know that's a very general answer. But I had spoken to Dr. Arnold as an undergrad about some possible programs. And I had a list of about 10. Ended up applying, I think, to 4. And got auditions at 3. So I went to Westminster Choir College in New Jersey, Portland State University in Oregon, and Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff, Arizona. And specifically, I had chosen NAU because I had worked with Dr. Edith Copley a couple of other times. She conducted an honor choir that I was in high school. And then I saw her conduct when my students were in an honor choir with her. And so I definitely knew a lot about her teaching techniques and knew that she particularly was someone I would like to study with. I also had just like a general interest in the East Coast and the West Coast. And Westminster had a great reputation. And I knew that Ethan Sperry was doing some really interesting and cool things at Portland State as well. So went to the 3 places. Ultimately, NAU felt like it could be home, but I also got an offer with a lot of podium time. You know, Dr. Copley called me up and let me know that I would have the men's chorale would be my class to teach for 2 years. And so I wouldn't just be studying, but I would continue teaching while I was studying. And that to me was really the clincher, you know, that I would be able to hone my craft in front of singers in an authentic experience, not just in conducting class. So that was the biggest draw. It was also just beautiful there, but you know, Princeton and Portland are also beautiful. You know, there were wonderful things at each place. It just really felt like the best fit with the most opportunities.
So you moved to, it's Flagstaff, right?
Yeah.
So you moved to Flagstaff. And what was your career like there? Your graduate program there?
Yeah. So things were busy. We had a fairly small program. So my first year, there were 5 of us, and second year, there were 6. So not one of those programs with 20 to 30 grad students. Not one of those places where it's just the one. But small enough that we were in each other's space quite a bit and definitely built a strong cohort there. We were very active, able to do lots of things. So there were 3 ensembles at the university that were always taught by grad students. But there were also ample opportunities in the community, even though it was only 80,000 people in the town. You know, I had 2 other choir jobs in addition to what I was doing at school. So I had the men's chorale, and I also worked with the 7th and 8th graders, 6th, 7th and 8th graders of the Flagstaff Youth Chorale. So I had the Cambiata Changing Voice group, and the youth chorale had 5 different ensembles. So there were 3 of us grad students that were working with the different groups there. And I also was the assistant conductor for the Master Chorale of Flagstaff, which was the local community chorus / symphony chorus. They also had a semi-pro chamber group that I sang in and did a little conducting with too. And then Dr. Copley retired from that job after being with them, I think, for about 25 years. And so I applied and was then the artistic director of the Master Chorale for my second year. And, you know, definitely filling your own mentor's shoes can be an interesting situation, but they were so welcoming and so open to try something different, while still so respectful of the great leadership they had had for so long. So I don't think that could have been a better transition than it was.
That sounds great. I mean, that sounds like great opportunities. And at the same time, you were also conducting the men's chorus. At that time, it was the men's chorus?
Yeah. Yeah. So I had, it was about 30 to 40, depending on the semester. And I would get all the first year students who were majoring in music. So they were not able to be in the top group yet. So you had some really, really strong soloists coming in as first years, and then also the non-majors that just love being in choir, and some really, really great mix of people in that ensemble. So lots of esprit de corps in that group. We would do We do these little Friday pizza gatherings, and you're just going to grab some pizza after class. And a lot of times, like, half of the choir would come. And, you know, that was always really nice to see. So
yeah. So takeaway from NAU.
Yeah. So first off, Dr. Copley is a whiz with choral literature, and she opened our eyes to so much music. You know, I thought that I had a pretty good sense of music history before, but three semesters of choral literature with her, and I felt like I really, really knew the repertoire. So that was a wonderful thing. The other thing that I would say I learned from her was just meticulous planning. You know, we learn to write lesson plans as undergrads, and we do that, and then you get out and you're teaching high school and you start writing your plans in a very different way than you did.
Yes.
But from her, I learned timing and moving on when it was time to move on. So I still, for every class, will write out the number of minutes I'm going to spend on things. And I really do stop. You know, today I could have kept going at 150 when I had more to do on one piece, but it was time to give the other piece some love. And yeah, that was definitely an issue for me when I taught high school. Sorry to my former students that we always had the fun song listed last on the lesson plan and that we didn't do it. So yeah, I'm so much better at following those incremental bits. So yeah, so choral literature and then the meticulous planning, I think, is really helpful.
There are so many things that you and I secretly, not secretly, but didn't know about each other that we're learning so much about here. So for our listeners, Matt started his position the beginning of this year, so basically August 16th at WSU, and I've been here for 11 years. And so although we've known each other for 3 months now, you know, ish, we're learning so much each other. So we'll talk about this in a future episode, but we both worked at a bank.
Yeah.
That's something we should talk about later.
Yeah.
So, okay, NAU, and then off to Louisiana State University.
Yeah. So I went to LSU for my doctorate. I did go straight on from my master's. There was part of me that really wanted to get back into teaching high school at that point, but I knew it was going to be super hard to leave. It already was terribly hard. One of my students said this was the worst breakup she ever had when I said that I was leaving. And also, this student had been dating her boyfriend since fifth grade, and they're still together. So the student hasn't had very hard breakups. But in any case, it was really, really hard telling my students I wasn't going to stay. So while I did want to go try out everything that I had learned in my master's with, you know, a middle school or high school group again, I was just like, if I'm going to get this doctorate, I have to do it now. And that's where my head was. So Louisiana State was another total new part of the country for me. Had never really been in the South before, except for like Florida to some beaches in Disney World. And yeah, so it was a total different part of the world for me. But LSU offered a really, really competitive assistantship. And not only did I have podium time, but I was also doing a lot of administrative work. So I was basically the office assistant for the director of choral activities for my second and third years there. And the first year I was doing a lot with recruitment and alumni relations. And so the admin work was really important for what we actually do in college teaching. You know, this definitely set me up for a lot of the committee type stuff that I do now. So yeah, LSU is this fantastic vocal performance program. So we had these crazy strong voices in the chamber choir for our recitals. And, you know, the type of literature that we could do when you knew that you had soloists that could sing pretty much anything was very exciting. LSU was actually the first opera program in the United States because, you know, opera came to the US from Paris to New Orleans. So then LSU was the first school to do vocal performance degrees.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. So this is not to say that other schools don't also have wonderful storied opera places, but, you know, it's the opera program at LSU has been going strong for a really long time. So, yeah, so it was just some fantastic big voices to work with. And it was very different than like my undergrad experience with these very fluty, smaller voices. You know, just getting to work with the different sizes of voices and choral programs, very different structure, was very cool. So really exciting. And I would say I found my voice quite a bit as a doctoral student taking voice lessons, more so than I had previously. So that was a very neat place to be. My mentor was John Dixon, who just retired this past May. And he really went above and beyond to make it feel like a home and family, a place that we were all part of the same family. You know, as graduate auditions, we would have maybe 10 to 12 people a year would come audition over the same couple of days. And he always planned it so that we could see one of the graduate recitals while we were there. And there'd be a reception at his house for like 4 to 5 hours with all the auditioning people, all the current graduate students, their significant others, if they had them, his wife. You know, it was just really, really welcoming, warm place. And he, more than anybody, embodied what Southern hospitality ought to be. So I think that one of the best things that I got from him was moving past my insecurities. You know, so I went through this, you know, I said, you know, the meticulous planning and the immense knowledge that I got from my master's degree, but that also instilled me with a lot of self-doubt. Once you know what you don't know, it can be kind of terrifying. And he was really great at helping us to trust ourselves and know what our strengths were, which was wonderful. He's quite an Anglophile. He loves British choral music. And we took a study tour where we did a pilgrimage. We walked 14 miles to Canterbury Cathedral. And so some cool things out there. But with his love of British choral music, he also loves a beautiful, long, long vocal line. And with those opera voices that he had in the choir, you know, they also were working on the beauty of line. So I was able to take that kind of meticulous micro level planning that I got from my master's degree and also compare it to this big macro smoothness. And in many ways, those two schools were the polar opposites of one another in the perfect way. I felt like I was really getting the other side, but neither side was wrong.
Sure.
In that sense. So in fact, one of my master's colleagues ended up coming to get her doctorate there as well. So she's in her final year now. And we both agreed, you know, we got so much out of the first place and so much different stuff from the second place. So it was a really nice balance.
Yeah. So then the last place that you were that you resided and worked prior to WSU was the University of Alabama.
Yeah. So I was in that fun class that got to finish my doctorate in my parents' basement. So I graduated with my doctorate in the spring of 2020. Very special time. So when I was on the job market, you know, had several interviews and a lot of positions just went away. A lot of searches were closed. No one knew what was going to happen after COVID initially hit, you know, and we're still in COVID right now, but we know how to deal with it a lot more than we did in March of 2020. So I was very, very lucky to get a position in choral music education at University of Alabama. So I was able to work with two choirs there, and I taught a smattering of other classes. So a music appreciation class. I had vocal methods for the music ed majors, which was kind of a mix of vocal literature and diction. I also had a vocal methods lab with the instrumental students and choral students. So that was more of like a vocal ped class. And one of the choirs I worked with was a lab choir that was conducted by junior and senior music ed students. So lots of varied opportunities. It was also a very challenging time to be teaching choral music anywhere. So I think the biggest thing that I learned from University of Alabama was to be able to work through flexibility, to be flexible and to make the most out of every situation. is we started off the year entirely on Zoom, no opportunities for singing in person. And then in November, we were able to start singing together, but groups of 16 or fewer. So I did have one choir, the chamber group had 20. So we had to Zoom just four people for every class. So a rotation of who'd be Zooming, and we could be outside 12 feet apart. Remember, it's November in the South, but it's still chilly and wet at times, you know, and the difficulty of being able to hear outside was a challenge. My other choir had about 50 students. So we would be in these semi-choirs, kind of spread on different sides of the building, and the kind of they would rotate who they'd get to sing with. So we were able to do some singing, but it was pretty challenging. Then in the spring, so our building was under construction. There had been a fire in April 2020, right after everyone was out for COVID. One of the wings of the School of Music had to shut down. But when that opened, that made available a lot more rehearsal spaces. So we were able to rehearse inside for 30 minutes at a time in the auditorium and be able to be spread out there. And that was immediately just such a wonderful experience, finally be able to hear each other once again. And there was a limit there though. Initially we could have 36. So we'd have an overflow outdoor rehearsal for the students that weren't allowed in. And we'd also were able to do some sectionals. So we were small enough that we could have eight tenors inside or eight basses inside. So ultimately things kept shifting. And by the end of the semester, we were cleared to have the whole choir inside for half an hour at a time. And we were able to do the Fauré Requiem, which was just over half an hour in length.
That's good.
So it was so great to give them a kind of a masterwork experience in a year that they really could have had hardly anything. So yeah, so it was just being ready to pivot at the drop of a dime. I think that I'll always be able to pivot from now on. There will always be plan B and C in my head, which, it's nice to be able to go with just one plan, but you never know what's going to happen. So I learned a lot of flexibility in that COVID year of teaching.
All right. So there we have it. This is a little background and what's places that Matt has been and things he's done. And as to what Matt does here at WSU, I'm certain that we'll get bits and pieces throughout our subsequent podcasts. Yeah. So we are up to rapid fire questions. Are you ready, Matt?
I am ready. Let's do it.
All right. So here we go. Do you have a favorite flavor of ice cream?
Yeah. So I really like vanilla bean if I'm going to have ice cream with something. But if I had to pick any favorite thing, I'm going to go with the current flavor of the month at Dairy Queen, which is sea salt toffee fudge blizzard.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So definitely sea salt toffee. I'm all about that.
That's a lot of things together. Yeah. Yes.
They go together very well too. So highly recommend.
This weekend, I know where I'm going.
Yes.
Okay. What is your favorite guilty pleasure show?
Yeah, I have a lot of favorite guilty pleasure shows. So I think that the one that I will share. Let's say One Tree Hill. One Tree Hill was a show that I started watching in high school, and I stayed with it through all of college and into teaching high school. And it is cheesy and dramatic, and every terrible thing that could happen to these people happens. I feel like I grew up with that show as they were growing up. So it's a good show.
Okay. If you could pick between being able to fly and being able to be invisible, which one would you pick and why?
I would be able to fly. I think that would be so fun to just see the world from that perspective and to be able to travel. And definitely I would fly.
Okay. Tacos or hamburgers?
Tacos for sure. Yeah. No question.
All right. Now more back to our subject matter. If you had to pick one favorite choral piece, what would it be?
My very favorite is In the Beginning by Aaron Copland. We sang it my junior year in Nordic Choir at Luther. And yeah, I think that Copland does just a fantastic job of painting each different day in a new way. And there's so much fun rhythmic content. But what's really cool is they have all these blind modulations. Like you'll end in C major in one section, and then you'll go to In the Evening and the Morning is the first day, and it'll be in like F sharp major from C. So these just random key shifts all over the place that work really beautifully in a structural way. So that is a piece that I would love to get to sing or conduct sometime again soon. So.
Okay. What is one composer that you feel needs more attention or perhaps hasn't seen as much daylight as you think they need to be?
Yeah. Oh, there are so many that we need to be paying more attention to. But one who I think we really have been sleeping on this composer is Undine Smith Moore. So she was, she's called the Dean of Black Women Composers in the mid 20th century. And, she has this oratorio about the death of Martin Luther King Jr. and some really beautiful spiritual arrangements and just a really wide variety of literature. Most of it's quite accessible, and yeah. So I would love to see some more music by Undine Smith Moore being performed.
Well, there you go, listeners. You have a challenge. Take a look at that composer. Okay, what is your favorite memory associated with choral music?
Oh, there are so many. Let's see. Picking one favorite memory is a challenge. But I think, I'll say, we were on Nordic Choir tour. It was my junior year, and half the choir had swine flu.
Oh gosh.
We had two buses, and one was the quarantine bus. So I remember needing to go to the urgent care in Albuquerque on tour, which was quite miserable. They gave me two Z-Packs though, and told me that I could take double the dosage because they didn't know what swine flu was yet. They just knew that I had the flu and bronchitis and something else going on at the same time. So that zapped me back right away. So our first concert back, it was in Denver, Colorado, and there was a big storm going on. And we just got to this point in the final piece on every program we did, O Lord God by Pavel Chesnikov. And so that was like Nordic Choir's closing piece. Usually we only did it as an encore, you know, and the lights of the church went out right at this moment. I will sing to the Lord as long as I live and praise thy great name while I have my being. And there was just this huge roar of thunder on this, this really, really pivotal part in the piece that's about singing as long as we live. And just going on through the storm and in the darkness, it was a really cool unifying moment. It was already a part of the piece we all loved so much. That was a really neat memory.
Okay. What projects are you working on right now that you're excited about?
Well, this podcast is one of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, this is episode one. We plan to have more of these. So that'll be fun to get to have conversations with conductors and teachers and singers from across the country and the world. So very excited about that. We are currently working toward our holiday celebration concert here at Washington State University. So it'll be our choirs combined together with the orchestra, and we're doing some really cool repertoire. But one piece that I'm excited to revisit in a new way, we're doing the first movement of Vivaldi's Gloria, which everyone has performed as an SATB piece. And I work with the treble ensemble here. But we know that Vivaldi wrote the piece for his singers in the orphanage that were all female. So The tenor part was actually sung by the altos. And we don't know for sure if anyone was singing the bass part or if it was just played by instruments. But nowadays, almost every performance we hear of the Vivaldi Gloria is by an SATB choir. But we're going to do an SSA. So that's kind of fun to have this little peek into history. So I'm excited to share that soon.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to hear it. That's going to be great.
Yeah.
So, well, Matt, it was great to talk to you today. We appreciate getting to know you and hearing your insights. And I'm sure that we'll hear more about you, about your work, and the way in which you think about these topics that are all near and dear to our hearts. So, any final thoughts you have for us today?
Yeah, as we kind of go through the timeline of where we've been and what we've learned from each place, just remember for all of us that life will take some twists and turns we maybe don't expect, but we are a product of everywhere we've been and everywhere we'll be. So, just make every place we go a place to learn.
I'm Dean Leafy.
I'm Matthew Myers.
And you've been listening to the Choir Fam podcast.
Remember to subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you liked the show, please rate and review. If you didn't like the show, please let us know how we can better serve our choir fam.
You can follow our Instagram page at choirfampod or email us at choirfampodcast@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you, and thanks again for being part of the Choir Fam.